Welcome to a network monitoring episode of Software Gone Wild. This time spread across literally 12 time zones, as I am in Croatian seaside waiting to go climbing tomorrow, and Eliza Jasinska is in Hawaii. And Nick Boraglio, who is the root cause of this podcast, is firmly rooted in the cornfield and recording the call. So, Nick, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Supposedly, we'll have a bit more sun tomorrow, and the rocks are nearby, so I'm a happy person. And Eliza, you are in some fantastic location, right?
Maui, baby. Yes, this is fantastic. I see palm trees and ocean out the window. I'm sorry, guys.
And it's 6 a.m. on your end and 6 p.m. on my end. So literally 12 time zones.
Indeed. I woke up this early, see?
Yeah.
Our company is hard to turn
around. I'm amazed at all the sacrifices you make for this podcast. Thank you.
Exactly. Now it's recorded forever.
Yes. So every time we meet, you'll go like, remember when I was in Maui and I had to wake up at 6 a.m.?
Who's going to buy
a beer? Open source monitoring podcast.
I wonder if that gets me a beer next time.
Definitely does.
Yeah, I would say it does.
Although, for this view, I'll go without beer. That's okay.
No, you get the beer. You just have to come to Slovenia.
Deal. It's about time. I haven't been there in a very long time.
Good. So whenever you get over here, and, well, do keep in mind that I might not be home, so sync with me first. You get a beer.
I know. Your travel schedule is pretty mad. So what are you up to? Are you traveling after this, or is the big tour over by now?
No. Last autumn was crazy, and then I dropped a number of things, including Interop. So it's just one or two small things before the summer break. Not too bad.
Nice.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Anyway, let's not bore the audience, although I guess they are all jealous that Eliza is in Hawaii now.
I think we can safely assume that.
Yeah. This thing started with another open source podcast we did a while ago. I don't remember the episode number, so I'll put that in the show notes. After listening to that, Nick sent me an email saying, well, we should do another one along the same lines, more focused on the monitoring tools. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll put you and Eliza in touch, and then I'll just listen. So, Nick, it's really your show.
Well, so monitoring is one of those things that I've always had a very strong like for. It's often forgotten. It's not necessarily easy to do. And most people sort of just keep it as if I have time, I'll do that. But it's a critically important piece of running a production service or network. And, you know, over the course of my career, I've looked at tons of different platforms from commercial to open source. And I always tend to come back to the open source stuff because of its flexibility and, frankly, because of the cost. I'd rather have it an operational cost than a capital cost, personally. It's an exciting time right now because there's a bunch of really fantastic open source monitoring platforms that, you know, are arguably better than many, if not all, of the commercial stuff that's out there. And I think it's a good idea to sort of shine some light on those, talk about what they can and can't do and where they're applicable and how they work with other things. And you guys had the original show, and I listened to it while I was mowing my yard, actually. And I emailed you that follow-up while standing in my garage, because that's how important I thought it was to sort of continue that process.
So with which granddaddy of the protocol shall we start, SNMP or syslog?
Oh, boy. Let's start with syslog, because SNMP is a quagmire.
Okay.
Syslog is one of those things that it's just there, and people often overlook it. But it's an extremely useful suite of information that once you compile it into a central location, you can get anything from host statistics and problems with spinning disks to optical power measurements that are changing. having all of that in a place that's easily searchable, or at the very least, a single place, is an incredibly powerful tool. And I think that a lot of network operators in the enterprise or their small to medium size, they don't really consider that as a really useful bunch of information. But frankly, you know, when I'm troubleshooting a problem, that's the first or second thing I look at.
Yeah, and what I was always missing was, and I guess it's somewhere out there, and now Elisa will jump in saying, yeah, it's this tool. I always wanted to have an overview of what log messages are there in my network.
And this is exactly what I wanted to say. I always have a problem with the overflow of log messages. You can't read thousands of them at a time, so filtering it down to something that you actually need and something that is actually relevant to you, that's mainly the problem in setting all of this up for me.
So how would you approach this problem?
Well, there's many great tools out there these days that first ingest syslog and then give you the possibility of filtering. I actually remember at my very, very first job, every time some additional error popped up that we knew was very relevant to our network or to the gear or to something, we were adding it to a list of this is what you really, and this was pre-times of any tools that were doing this filtering. We just added it to a list of just some random parser that was going through it and alerting us on those particular messages. All of that comes in tools pretty much out of the box these days, so it's not quite as difficult anymore as it used to be. But, oh, this is a new code for a line card failure that we haven't seen before. Okay, we should add this one. I remember this is how it went back then.
So what tools would you use these days?
I recently did a little bit of an evaluation because I was setting up a tool for someone. And I went in between, so Nick will jump in for sure. So I was debating whether Greylog or Elk would be the tool of choice here. Greylog being a syslog analyzer, so it's really meant for that. With Elk, I'm not quite sure if it's actually built for that purpose or not. It probably is. Both of them in the backend use Elasticsearch and are very expandable, as in the more logs you have, the more Elasticsearch notes you can add to your thing. So I had a really hard time deciding between the two. I'm not going to give away yet what I went with. What do you think about this, Nick?
I think for me, I would probably go with Greylog first. Elk, I tend to think of as something that I want to shove more than just logs into. But Greylog, to me, seems like the right tool for that particular application. But full disclosures, I don't have a ton of experience with both of them. I'm limited in what my decision is based off of.
Which was exactly my situation a month or two ago when I was thinking, okay, which of those should we do? Okay, I did end up going with Greylog because I had the same feeling. It seemed a little bit more lightweight and not as many dependencies to set up as with Elk.
It seemed a little more purpose-built to me.
Yeah, yeah. So we set up that. It pretty much, there were one or two hurdles that I had to overcome. I forgot what they were. So in Greylog, you can configure different input mechanisms, whether it's actually TCP or something, some other formatted structure that you want to give it, just text, and then you can put in regular expressions that will match for your particular logs. We had to fiddle around with that a little bit, but after that, it collected. You can set up dashboards that tell you per device or per area what your top messages are. So there was something we noticed, some line card, something that was going on one particular router that we didn't really pay attention to. It was, 70% of our log messages are related to this. Maybe we should look into that.
By the way, can it do any root cause analysis? Like you're getting 100 messages that the OSPF neighbor is down, but they're all on the same interface, for example.
Well, you'll be able to group it as such. I think there is an alerting mechanism too. So if it triggers a certain threshold, you can probably send out emails or integrate it with something. I haven't even gotten to that point of setting that up yet. Anything other than that, I think you have to do manually at that point. So it's literally just collecting and analyzing numbers.
And to oversimplify things now, if I'm a total idiot like I am in this area, and I want to get started with something, what should I take?
That's where I was at a month ago, and I went with Greylog.
Okay, works for me.
Yeah, I would recommend the same thing. You know, start with Greylog, and then when you want to expand into some other more complicated stuff, then Elkstack is... That was my impression. I'm kind of happy that you came to the same one. I think the barrier of entry is lower with Greylog, although I've seen, you know, Docker files for Elk and things like that. So depending on your level of your pain threshold, you might be able to throw that into a container.
But then you have to learn what Docker is first, right?
Yeah, I mean, varying levels of pain threshold are involved. You know, it's where do you spend your resources? But, you know, again, I think lowest barrier of entry is probably Greylog.
Yeah, so we went the other way. Instead of Docker, we found ourselves an Ansible module that was ready to go to set up Greylog and all the dependencies. Spun that up. It was literally set up in like 5 minutes.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very cool. I'm a big fan of Ansible.
So am I. There were a couple of things like we didn't notice the first time we used the script. We just didn't really pay attention. There was like a user and a password set somewhere. There was details too. So it sets up Elasticsearch separately. It sets up Greylog in itself, and it sets up a web server that Greylog is reachable on after. A couple of the details had to be tweaked for the particular install, which we, of course, didn't, because we were like, oh, want to have this up now, run script. And then we had to go back and pretty much do it again, but that was the next 5 minutes, and everything seemed to be all right for that. I think my choice with Elk, there was more than three components, because I looked at it as, okay, Greylog, Elasticsearch, a web server, and I think Elk had another one or two things. You would have to, there was Logstash in between, right? So it just seemed like more things that we have to worry about while even setting it up. Although in theory, and we haven't tested this, in theory, we thought that it would probably scale better if we get to a higher volume at some point.
That's been my impression of it as well, is that it expands and scales a little better. But it's, again, it's that barrier of entry thing, right? If you're only going to have X amount of things that you want to look at or consume with it, then Greylog seems like the lowest barrier of entry. If you're going to have this, you know, extensive sim type of environment that needs to be able to grow on demand or at a large rate, then Elk is sort of the open source Splunk equivalent, with the extra stuff. But with that, there's extra components you have to deal with as well.
Right, so you haven't mentioned Splunk yet. I remember that from back in the days. Have you used that recently?
I've used Splunk as recently as this morning.
That's fairly recent.
Yeah, it's a great tool. I wouldn't consider it necessarily open source because of its pricing structure, although they do have, I believe, a free for X amount of data offering. But it's very hard to find something that is as flexible and expandable and useful as Splunk. I'm a big fan of it as long as I don't have to pay for it.
Right, exactly.
It does have a fairly steep pricing structure, but it is also extremely well documented and very, very powerful.
Yeah, I forgot about that they actually had a billing structure. That's right.
Yeah, it's. I believe they bill based on like amount of data written to disk or consumed by the collector, but they also have some really interesting and useful things like the Splunk connectors, so you don't necessarily have to have syslog per se, you know, consume the syslogs, but you've got these applications, these agents that run on, say, you know, a set of clusters, a cluster of Linux systems, and they are pushing their log data via the Splunk, I can't remember the actual name for it, but it's basically the Splunk connector back to the main Splunk collector node. And you can also expand it kind of in the same way that you can Elk, where you've got different indexers and front end, and it's very flexible. I mean, there's a reason that it's got a, you know, a price tag on it, right? It's a good piece of software.
And speaking of extendability, I mean, it's not like Greylog cannot be extended at all. It's still Elasticsearch in the back end that you could scale out on no number of nodes if you wanted to. So I feel like even though we set it up on like a single server right now, you could put the web server somewhere separate, right? You could put the Elasticsearch somewhere separate. So there might still be some wiggle room to...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's important to say, right? I mean, I wouldn't want people to think that it isn't expandable, right? Because it very much is. It's just not... The barrier of entry, like I said, is lower, I think. It's easier to set up. There's less moving parts. It doesn't require all of these sort of moving components on the back end, per se. But it is definitely not, you know, it's not a one-trick pony, and it's not in a box that you can't get it out of. It's definitely expandable. Realistically speaking, I don't think you can go wrong with any of the three we've talked about, right? They all are very useful tools, and they're, you know, they all have their strengths and weaknesses. It's going to be based on what your workflow needs to be. If you've got budget for Splunk, by all means, it's hard to compare other things to it. If you've got developers that are wanting to write interesting things to pull things out of Elasticsearch, and you're going to throw a bunch of stuff at it, you know, maybe Elk Stack is better. If you have a sysadmin that just wants some reasonably good analytics based on log data, you want to be able to search on it, I'd probably go with Greylog. It's going to be heavily dependent on what you want your workflow to be.
Yeah, and maybe let's note that the thing that is useful in any of those cases is a basic knowledge of regular expressions to customize your searches and set things up the way you need them. Because I found out with Greylog that the out-of-the-box searches were not quite doing what I wanted, so I had to parse out the hostname field, I had to parse out the timestamp and kind of be like, okay, and now group it by those fields that I told you to parse. That's kind of the level of expertise you need there.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Splunk actually makes pretty easy to do. But I think that touches on something that you brought up earlier, in that the biggest issue with a centralized log host is the monumental amount of data that it has the potential to generate and present. And that's off-putting to a lot of people, myself included, right? I remember turning on what I called the fire hose, which is basically every piece of network equipment on the campus I worked at, and the SIM fell over. And so we had to set up a syslog front end for it, but we lost the ability for the people that were running the SIM to sort of run their little reports. So we had to write a bunch of parsing tools and things like that. This was before Elk Stack and Greylog was really a thing, because there was so much data, they couldn't really get the important pieces out of it. And that's what some of these three things that we've talked about, they allow you to do these sort of custom dashboards that say, here's all the ISIS adjacency events that have happened over the last 24 hours. You know, those kind of things become a lot easier when you have this regular expression-based front end. And it makes the amount of data you have to eyeball significantly more palatable.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the thing that often gets overlooked, right? Because you set up I've done this too, right? I said, oh, we need a log host. Here's the log host. Now point everything at the log host, and then you stop. Right. The important thing is that you go in and you sort of make use of that data. At the very least, you know, you use something like Swatch or Sec to parse out the useful things and present the important things. At the very least, at the best, you have a nice front end that you can create that stuff with. But I've said it a million times, like building a network is really, really easy. Monitoring a network and running it correctly, that's hard. That's the actual hard part, is monitoring and running the network in an efficient way. And that's why a lot of these tools are important. You have to actually use them in the way that they're, to the extent of which they're useful.
Okay, now that you mentioned running the network, the other thing that everyone is using in one way or another is SNMP. So what would you use there in the post-MRTG days?
Oh boy. You know, SNMP is one of those things I have a love-hate relationship, where most of it is hate, but...
Don't we all?
Yeah, I know. Everyone who's been around has the same feeling. Lately, I've been spending a lot of time messing around with LibreNMS, which is an open source fork of Observium, and it's a very powerful SNMP-based monitoring system that's very feature complete. I don't know if you guys have had much time with that, but that's the one I've played with most recently and for the longest duration of time.
I have not set anything SNMP-based up in years, to be honest.
You're lucky.
So how do you monitor the errors on the interfaces?
these days, but now we're skipping very far ahead here. So these days, everyone is push-based stuff is pretty much what everyone's looking at these days. All the like telemetry, streaming type mechanisms.
Is anyone shipping that? I know everyone is looking forward to it.
I know. I've had a chance to look at a beta version on Juniper that does something like that, which looks very promising. Right now, I am actually taking counters and everything I would normally get out of SNMP just out of NetConf. But that requires, the tools are not as ready for it, right? Where you go and you take Observium or Isinga or whatever else is there. You set that up, you point it at Cacti, I guess, too. You take it, you point it at your router, and it imports data, and you're done. Versus the way I'm parsing it out of NetConf right now, I actually have to do a lot of coding around that. It takes the right values and puts them into the right database, etc.
It's not Juniper you're working with, it's Cisco.
It's Juniper that I'm working with, right, yeah. I've heard the recent version of iOS XR actually gives you native NetConf, finally.
Yeah, I think that's there. You can also get some of that telemetry data out of S-Flow, right? So the devices that actually support the official S-Flow spec should be able to generate, you know, at least some telemetry data.
Oh, like counter samples, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you can do, S-Flow is my new favorite thing, right? You can do a whole bunch of different stuff with S-Flow. You know, a lot of people, when they think about it, oh, this is the non-Cisco NetFlow. But that's really not what it is. I mean, it can kind of do that.
Nick, stop right there. In 3 minutes, what's the difference between S-Flow, J-Flow, and NetFlow?
So NetFlow is Cisco proprietary, and there are implementations of it that aren't Cisco, but it uses the flow table of the equipment to generate a source dest set of data that has source port, source IP, dest IP, and then in newer versions like V9 or IPFix, which I believe is the open source equivalent or open equivalent of NetFlow V9, you can append extra stuff in there like VLAN IDs and other stuff. You use templates to define that. S-Flow has some of the same features. So to take a step back, NetFlow V5 did not support IPv6, only IPv4. Whereas NetFlow V9 supports greater than that, you get, you know, IPv6 flow data as well. S-Flow has, as long as I've been using it, has supported both, but it's sampled. It's not one-to-one. So you have a 1 in, I think, 512, I think is the lowest I've ever run it in, 1 in 512 sample of your flows. And it'll give you, at face value, it gives you similar functionality to NetFlow, where you can say, you know, this is my top talker host and here's the top destination and that kind of thing. You can grab that kind of data out of the S-Flow packets, but you can also do things like run an application called Host S-Flow D, which is a software shim that runs on like a Linux box that'll start to give you like CPU data, memory data, and other types of interesting and useful information that you can collect and graph over time. JFlow is Juniper's implementation of NetFlow from, you know, my experience with it. You guys can chime in if that's not as complete as you'd like. But
so maybe it's worth noting that if you're only looking at the functionality of collecting flows IP to IP and you need the thing that NetFlow does out of the box, really, with S-Flow, you can achieve the same thing, but you're going to have to move your calculations into the software side and basically reassemble your flows on the software side, which takes the overhead away from the router, which is something I personally like a lot because I don't want for my router to be busy with that kind of thing. We can do that on a server somewhere and calculate it out, which is why I like it. It's more flexible in that sense that you can do more different things with it. It can export all kinds of different data because it's not so fixed on only reporting flows of your network. Actually, Max, you mentioned the host S-Flow. I just saw a note somewhere the other day that they now added a format for optical levels, which made me really happy to be exported by S-Flow.
Yeah, the nice thing about S-Flow is that the guys that are working on that are very approachable. And if you tell them, this is something that's really useful, can you add it? If they can, they will. And they're very open to suggestions and working with the community. I did a podcast with Peter, he was, I believe, sort of the, you know, the brain, you know, the main author of S-Flow from some years ago. And Brett Salisbury was on the podcast with us, and he was mentioning, hey, there's some stuff that'd be interesting to do with Docker with this. And a month later, it's all possible now. It's all been integrated.
Oh, nice.
That's the one thing that I really like about S-Flow, other than the fact that, you know, I can run it on hosts and it gives me some telemetry data and some other stuff, and it can also function as an analog for NetFlow. It seems like it's self-evident to me, right? And I also like the fact, like you mentioned, that it sort of pushes the computational overhead onto a device that has, it's going to be a much lower barrier to get more CPU and memory and stuff on a host than it is into my router. Right? I don't want my router having to deal with this stuff if it doesn't have to.
So I guess the problem, though, is that you need to understand much more about what you're actually looking for and how to calculate it, because it's very native in a sense. And I don't think, like, now looking at Greylock or Splunk and all the stuff, there's not that many targeted tools out there that are that easy. You know, you just set up your aggregations and do whatever. There's plenty of parsers and there's really good tools out there to collect things, but I feel like it requires more work to get the aggregations and views out of it that I need. Because it's so different per use case, really, that there's just way more flexibility.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with S-Flow is that, and I believe that's why a lot of folks see it as just a non-Cisco NetFlow, is that you can turn it on and you can point it at a collector, say, you know, NFDump. And NFDump, as long as you tell it this is an S-Flow stream, it will just consume it and log it and keep it formatted as if it's flow data, right? And it'll present it in the front end. You can query against it as if it's flow data. And so it's functionally equivalent in that way. But if you want to do more with it, you do truly have to understand a lot more detail of what it's giving you. So it's almost its own worst enemy in that way, in that it's really easy to set it up and make it do the simple things that NetFlow does. To really truly understand everything that it's capable of, you have to have a much deeper knowledge of what it's giving you and how to sort of compile it.
I'm going to have to plug PMACCT at this point.
Stop right there.
Is that where you were going, Ivan?
Well, I have two questions. The first one is, let's say I'm yet again a total beginner. After all this, I'm now totally scared. I don't have a clue what to do. So what tool shall I use if I don't know what I need?
For what?
Oh, flow collector. And I don't know what a flow collector is. I just heard that I need one.
Well, if you don't have one and you're running a network of any size, you definitely need one.
Okay, so what?
The nice thing is you've got options, right? The de facto, I think, is starting to migrate from NFDump, NFCap, NFSYN to PM account, or that's what I call it, because of there's more features there, but I think that it's a little more complicated to set up. I don't know, you can correct me if you don't agree. I mean, even for a beginner, I think NFDump is kind of a stretch.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, NFDump at least gives you some form of front end that you can immediately see something in, but it doesn't scale well whatsoever. I didn't want to put it that way now, damn it. But as soon as you put a little bit more data at it, it's not dealing with it very well anymore. And you get a lot of, that's the other problem with S-Flow really, and NetFlow too, that you end up having a lot of data because it's sampled, and depending on your traffic, if you have a very high capacity network, it just very quickly can get many, many input data. That's a little bit of a problem. But yeah, so NetDump and things like that work well if you just want to try it out and see. PM account is also my go-to tool for things like that. I would call it a backend tool because it doesn't really provide you with any access to the data. It provides a mechanism to aggregate, to parse it, and to put it into different database backends or queues or stuff to pass it on to systems. And then you have to work on, okay, how do I represent this now? Which is something you do when, you know, when you have your own graphing system that you want to plug it into, or there is a way to put it into Elasticsearch and look at it through Elk. So there is a number of ways to go about PM account. And the flexibility is what makes it a little bit scary in the beginning, I guess, because it's just, oh my God, so which of those output mechanisms should I use now? And how do I actually get to my data quickly? That's a little bit of a problem, but then it's so flexible, as in if you want to change that, you still have the same tool. You can plug it into a different backend, use it differently if you have any issues with the amount or anything. So very flexible.
Yeah, there are a couple bolt-on front ends for that as well that I haven't had a lot of experience playing with, but they did look relatively interesting. But again, you're running into the flexibility and complexity over simplicity and ease of use. It's going to be highly dependent on size, like what are you trying to consume with it. I believe that Nmon might have a free for a certain amount of data offering. Nmon are the folks that, it's the company around S-Flow. Their commercial product is pretty great too.
Oh my God. So when I was early in my 20s, I wrote an S-Flow parser in Perl, and turns out there's actually still three people out there in this world who use this.
Oh, wow.
I would not recommend that whatsoever, but there is another way of plugging it into your own systems. If you're doing your things in Perl, you might as well.
So if you love MRTG, there is this tool from Elisa that does S-Flow in Perl.
Pretty much, yeah.
This helps lend credence to the statement that I always used to hear is everything everywhere boils down to a Perl script somewhere.
Exactly. Although,
that's the XKCD comic, right?
I can't remember where I heard it, but it's shockingly true.
Well, times are changing. I think these days everything comes down to a Python script somewhere.
Yeah, it's converting over to that.
So, Elisa, the other question I wanted to ask before was, if you forget that you have like 10 years experience with PMHGT and you would be a total beginner, what would be the learning curve? How long would it take to get relatively fluent with it?
Oh, it's really hard to say, because when I used PMAccount for the first time, the feature set was so completely different than to what it is right now. I remember feeling that it was fairly complicated in the beginning, but then all the things that I felt were complicated back then are not the case anymore right now. Paolo has been continuously developing it for the past 10 or 15 years, and he has added so many things to it that, yeah, the Elasticsearch backend with Elk makes it fairly easy to set something up and see graphs immediately. I don't know. I'm thinking if I would sit down on it and have to like set up Elasticsearch, set up this, set up that, you know, it would probably take you a week of like fiddling around and trying to figure out how everything works. But it's the same as we were saying with Greylock before. It's where do you put your expenses, right? That's your operational cost of setting that up and having the system. I think it's definitely a little bit more complex than installing a Greylock instance, but it is not terrible. And the community around PMAccount is very, very active. There is a mailing list. People ask and answer questions constantly. So that's a very good point of like, there are people out there who are going to help you if you need anything.
Yeah, I think that's an important aspect of a lot of the open source tools, right? And it's something that, you know, in another lifetime, I worked at an enterprise back in the 90s, and I literally heard the statement, if we install these open source tools, who do we blame when they don't work?
Right.
And that's a hurdle that a lot of enterprises have never really gotten over. So Red Hat sort of became the, you know, we're the enterprise Linux kind of, now there's a throat to choke. But with a lot of the tools, it's basically community-based. So the enterprises have a hard time dealing with that because there's money involved directly. Whereas, you know, some other environments that might have developers in-house or that, you know, they're comfortable with dealing with open source communities, they're more likely to adopt some of these things. But I think it's important to sort of discuss or at least identify and recognize that these communities are full of people that are pretty passionate about what they're doing. And they're generally responsive and polite. That's not always the case, but my experience has been pretty good with that kind of thing, with a couple of notable exceptions. Everyone is willing to help and they want to help and they're cool about it. And they're accessible more or less all the time, right? Because a lot of it's mailing list based. And in an open source community, you get folks from all over the world that are on different time zones. I remember emailing the middle of the night. I can't remember which project it was. And like, you know, 10 minutes later, I had a response like, oh, hey, we know that's a problem. And here's the bug ID. We'll fix it in the next release kind of thing. I think that's pretty powerful. And that says something.
So assuming you would have enough budget, Would you buy a tool or would you get to more people and use an open source tool?
I struggle with that daily.
Me too.
Because my tendency is to build over buy, but I know that that doesn't necessarily always scale. I will do my best to look at all the options. If I have a budget, knowing that I'm probably going to have an easier time with a one-time expenditure than getting an FTE, money for a full-time engineer or something to maintain it, I probably will buy something. But if it's something that I'm really comfortable with and there's good documentation for, then I don't have a problem using open source stuff. So I think it's going to be heavily dependent on what it is.
And in my experience, it also depends on how you use it and what you want to get out of it, because often the tools just don't give you 100% of what you need. And if you need to adapt them in any sense, that's much more accessible with open source than with anything you would get out of the box. So are you willing to compromise with something out of the box that may not 100% do what you're looking for, but is still good enough? Or are you willing to put the work in and adapt it to your environment or what you need?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it's not just the open source or the commercial tools that don't give you 100% of what you want. In monitoring, my experience has been almost nothing does everything that you want it to do. You're going to have 85% if you're really lucky, and then the other 15% you're going to have to figure out another way to do. And that's sort of independent of whether it's something you're paying for or something you're building yourself, like an open source tool, not written as necessarily writing yourself.
Okay, so let's move to the third thing, because I'm really excited about this one. We talked about this call before. We made a list of like three things: SNMP base, syslog base, and monitoring when it comes to latency tools and things like that. I've not used anything like this before, and I'm other than set up smoke ping to maybe measure latency. But I'm very curious how the world looks in that space right now, because I'm looking at setting something like that up, and I hear you have some experience with that, Nick.
Yeah. So in the world that I live in, research and education, there's been a tool that it's been around for quite some time. It's part, you know, my experience with this tool, it's called OAMP, the one-way latency testing suite. My experience with it has been primarily in a packaged tool called Perf Sonar, which is primarily maintained by my employer, ESnet. And then, you know, there's other, obviously, community contributions and, you know, other R&E institutions also that help manage that. But OAMP is an interesting latency tester and graphing tool that is very sensitive, can give you extremely useful data, and you can run it. I mean, you can get the binary and compile it and run it on anything and collect the data that it generates. But it's useful for anything from testing void implementations, because you're going to see jitter and things like that, up through testing like wide area network latency over huge geographic areas. And we've been using that extensively for probably close to 10 years. At least that's how long I've been familiar with it. And the nice thing about it is it doesn't rely on ICMP. You know, like SmokePing will do its pings or its TCP-based stuff. OAMP is going to use UDP to generate these things. So it's going to understand, it's got a sender and a listener, right? So it's two components. And then if you want the reporting back in, there's the MA that's on off somewhere else that gets all of the data, compiles it and presents it to you. But
so would you send up the sender and the listener on like different servers connected to different parts of the network and then measure in between those?
Yeah, so you can set up meshes basically. So the way our deployment works, we've got OAMP servers all over the world, and they're in this huge mesh that will test based on, I set this up to talk to this, and then it reports back to the front end. And so I can say, well, my latency between Boston and Amsterdam over this 40 gig circuit is X, but here's when an event happened. What happened right here? You know, and it graphs that over time. You know, so one of the things that it heavily relies upon is an extremely accurate time source, because it's so sensitive that if the time is skewed at all, you're going to be able to tell, and the results are going to be inaccurate. That's how sensitive it is. Running OAMP on things like Raspberry Pis and stuff like that that don't have a good clock is more problematic than running it on, say, you know, a relatively robust server, you know, 1U server or something.
Okay.
But yes, you basically set up a sender and a listener. You can set up a sender and a listener on the same nodes, but you don't want to do things that aren't the one-way latency necessarily over the same physical interfaces on that host, or else you'll skew the results, right? So like on the Perf Sonar platform, it also does bandwidth testing. And you don't want to do the bandwidth testing over the same physical interfaces as you do the latency testing, obviously.
Oh, it does that too?
Yeah.
How does it go about that? Do you know?
Perf Sonar does IPERF3 testing. You can do it scheduled or you can do it on demand. It'll also utilize NUT TCP for bandwidth testing. And we do that because my job is to move these very large chunks of scientific data around, potentially from one continent to another. And, you know, if the scientist is saying, well, this is time sensitive and I'm not getting the throughput that I need, we have these testers available. So I can say, well, okay, let me test this link from London to Washington, this 100 gig link, and just blast as fast as it'll go. We can tell based on that there could be a problem or there could be something on the host side.
That sounds fantastic. That sounds exactly like what I'm looking for. Okay, I'm going to have to look into this when we're done.
Yeah, Perf Sonar is a wonderful tool, and I'd be happy to talk more about it. We actually did a podcast on it a couple of years ago that I can link you to as well, if you're interested.
Awesome. I'll dig that up.
Absolutely. Yet again, the same question as I asked before. Does it have any root cause analysis? So you're doing this latency measurement between any two endpoints in this huge mesh, and some things go over common links. So does it know that?
No, not necessarily. You can kind of ascertain that based on how you have the mesh set up, but it's not going to give you this, I'm going to put it in and it's going to tell me this is broken, right? You're going to have some level of knowledge of your topology and understanding of the baselines to figure out what it is that you're seeing. You'll be able to see anomalies, obviously, right? Because there's a really nice graphing front end. You can say, oh, here, at 2:00 in the morning, this happened. What is that? And after you've looked at it for long enough, you can usually tell, you know, well, this is because of a fiber event, or that kind of stuff kind of comes with time. It's not going to really present you with any kind of root cause analysis. But as you get more experienced with looking at the data, you'll be able to identify this is potentially a problem that's based on X.
Now, haven't you got the memo that we have to replace experience with machine learning?
Yeah, I haven't subscribed to that yet. There's no substitute for experience.
I know that, but some people don't believe me.
You know that, and I know that, but I'm going to say it out loud.
But this is a good point, because like all those tools give us a lot of data, but then the question is, what do we make out of it? How do we correlate it? How, you know, events? What I'm really interested in how would be able to like correlate data out of different tools, like we have our S-flow that's reporting something, we see something going wrong in syslog and something with the latency happened at the same time. And how do you mingle those different inputs really together into something that gives you an answer about what just happened in your network, which is a human thing really to do right now. But I mean, I could imagine there would be ways in just the correlation space to be able to say, look, there's something that happened based on different input data.
Yeah, that's the trick, right? I mean, right now, we are the correlation engine for the most part. I mean, that's not necessarily always true, but a person looking at, you know, very different sets of data is going to say, I'm going to correlate the time, right? It's the first thing I'm going to start with. This happened at this time, this also happened at this time, and this happened at this time. We can probably assume that something happened that caused all three of those things that's related. But that correlation stuff to me, the machine learning, I guess, that's middleware. And there's always going to have to be somebody that sort of vets that stuff, because it's going to be able to hit, just like everything, it's going to hit 80%. You're going to be able to get 80%. But those edge cases are almost always going to take a person with experience to figure out. That, you know, that's my opinion. I'm pretty sure it's right.
Yeah, I agree.
So do I, of course. Another thing, now that we started talking about figuring out what happened, are you guys collecting the BGP, historical BGP data, like updates, to be able to figure out whether something went down or something?
Yes.
So what tool are you using for that?
There's a couple of different ways that I've done that. And I will go out on a limb and say that is one of the most useful overlooked pieces of data in running any wide area network, or even, you know, anybody that has a BGP peering. In the past, we did simple SNMP polling for that MIB that had the amount of routes. So I'm receiving X routes from this peer, and I set thresholds up because I know essentially what they need to be. I've got a bunch of bilateral peerings, then I want to know if suddenly I'm seeing fewer than I expect from those bilateral peerings, because that's going to tell me, you know, something's going on there, and then I need to look at my other paths to make sure they have capacity to handle that. So just simple SNMP polling for those MIBs, is that's the hell of a world of that. I also currently utilize fairly heavily the BGP Mon service that I think is now owned by Cisco. Was originally like a dude that just had a project that he needed built, so he built it and made it a service. And then he sold it to OpenDNS, and then they sold it to Cisco. But that's still a very, very powerful suite of tools. They'll give you alerts based on potential prefix hijacking or leaked routes or ASN origin changes. It's really, really powerful stuff. And it's hard to get it anywhere else because he's got this like global set of sensors that see all this data. Those are the two things that I rely on the most. And what are you guys using for that kind of thing?
I don't have anything interesting on that. Let's see. I collected BGP updates at some point. I forgot what for, really.
Yeah, I found that it's...
Oh, to correlate with... Oh, no, that was the BGP table, not the updates.
Yeah, exactly.
I found that it's very interesting to graph. Like, say you have a peering into Exchange Fabric, and you've got a bunch of different peers, and they're all like settlement free, for example. And then you've got your one or two or 10 transit peerings based on geography. If you graph the amount of prefixes that you're seeing from all of those peers over time, you can start to baseline what you expect. And so if one drops off or starts sending you a whole bunch more, assuming that your maximum prefix threshold is not within like 10 routes or something, you can kind of correlate your traffic flow based on those routes, and you can identify events that have caused shift of traffic over long periods of time. It's also a really useful troubleshooting tool if, say, you're running close to capacity on certain circuits and you all of a sudden are bumping up against the ceiling. You can say, oh, well, look, we lost this huge set of prefixes from this bilateral peer, but the peer didn't necessarily go down, right? Because you're probably going to alert on up-down of peers, but you're probably not going to be looking at if the amount of routes changes from that peer dramatically, which I will assert is a very powerful set of data to have.
So the other thing is maybe in S-Flow, not all the devices automatically correlate with BGP data. So S-Flow has a couple of fields BGP related that it could report on, but then not all the routers actually do that. So in PM account, Paolo built a BGP receiver into that gets the updates and correlates them with S-Flow data.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to know more, we need a podcast or two about that, right, Elisa?
Yeah, haven't you already done one with Paolo on PMA?
Yeah.
I'm sure he talked about this. He did this a long time ago.
Yeah, I did.
So this has been
with Paolo.
Yeah, this has been a part of PM account for a long time. So what you essentially do, you set up your BGP collector, you spin up BGP on it, your S-Flow collector, you spin up BGP on it, and just establish sessions from various points where you collect your NetFlow from various boxes, and it'll get all the updates and parse whatever destination the actual packet that S-Flow reports was meant for. It will correlate that with the current AS destination, AS path, et cetera, and add that on onto your data. So out of that, you can start grouping things by how much of my traffic is going down a certain AS path, how much is going to a certain first hop AS or a certain last hop AS, et cetera, et cetera.
Now that we're talking about related projects, this is also how David Barroso got his SDN internet router implemented.
Oh, right, exactly, because he put PM account onto the Arista boxes, yeah.
Onto an Arista switch, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really interesting project. I didn't realize that he was using PM account.
Everyone does.
Yeah, everyone uses PM account somewhere.
yeah, seems, except me.
And everyone should buy Paolo a beer, too.
I'd be willing to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you do anything for S-Flow then, Nick?
Right now, we don't have any devices that have a complete S-Flow implementation.
Oh.
Now, I've done it in the past, but I use NFDump or enough cap, I guess, technically speaking, to capture the S-flow data and really only used it as a NetFlow analog. So I wasn't necessarily exercising it as much as I could.
So homework for after this call, you're looking at PM account and I'm going to have to check out Persona.
Yeah, it's been on my list for actually since the last podcast you guys did to check out. Actually, that's not true. I did some S-flow stuff with SDN OpenFlow switches at the supercomputing conference. We exported S-flow data to the Inmon collector, which worked fine. But I wasn't actually running the Inmon collector. I was running the SDN switches. So I didn't get a lot of internals. I just got to consume the three graphs and stuff.
So you guys got your homework. Let's wrap this up.
All right.
Wait, who's grading the homework? I'm concerned.
Elisa is grading yours, you're grading hers.
Okay.
I'm staying out of this picture.
Because I get the feeling that you're the professor that never gives A's.
Me? No. Anyway, Nick, where can people find you?
So I have a blog, forwardingplane.net, that probably doesn't get as much attention as it should anymore. And on Twitter, I'm just at Baralio.
And Elisa?
And I never know what to say because I don't blog. I guess I'm on Twitter at FoolElisa, but I don't tweet as much as I should probably. Drop me an email.
Okay, so I'll do your shameless plug. The website for Elisa is bigwaveit.org. And if you need someone for a network automation project, she's available for consulting engagements, right?
That is true, yes.
Okay. And I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net or @iOSHints on Twitter. If you want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net, even though I know this podcast has had nothing to do with SDN, which is like refreshing. And for all the other details, we'll put together a long list of show notes. Just browse through them and go and download the tools and use them. So have fun.
Awesome.